This is Nick Treadwell, and you are listening to Nick Treadwell's Storyville. Chapter 14. It wasn't so much that the lady bartender at the Three Musketeers was beautiful, which she was, but that she had not seemed impressed by Durwood Dawkins. His Cadillac hadn't impressed her, nor had the large wad of bills he usually carried. But she seemed to be impressed by the fact that he was a jet pilot for hire. Maybe, possibly, would he take her for a ride someday? "Sure," he said. "Any day, any night." Then he impressed her some more by telling her how quickly they could get to so many different places. Why, just last week, it had taken him only 3 hours to fly a private party to the Dominican Republic. And what a strange party. A great-looking blonde in short shorts, accompanied by a cage. The cage, he knew, had a man in it because he heard him yell when the cage was dropped from the plane's cargo door. These things did Durwood Dawkins tell the bartender, because he had already had 4 martinis. He told most of the rest of the bar, including a man at the end who wore old grey chinos and threadbare shirts and had been able to support his terminally ill wife and family for the past 4 years only because he made a phone call once a week to pass on anything interesting he had heard. He made this call for $45 a week. The person he called told him only 2 days ago they were looking for a blonde woman and a dark-haired man with thick wrists. Big Mouth Dawkins' story might not mean anything, but then again it might. The man with the chinos finished the one beer he allowed himself on his way home from work every night and called that special telephone number. Perhaps this time there might even be a bonus. An hour later, the lady bartender was getting ready to go off duty. Durwood Dawkins wished his apartment was cleaner. It would make for a neater score. But while she was in the back checking out, Dawkins was met at the bar by a man with a voice so dry it sounded as if his throat were lined with graham crackers. "Are you Durwood Dawkins, the pilot?" the man asked. Dawkins sized the man up quickly. He didn't look like much, an old suit, unstyled hair. He wasn't a client or an owner. It was therefore safe to be rude. "Who wants to know?" "My name is Smith. Tell me about your flight last week to the islands."
"What flight?"
"The blonde woman, the cage with the man in it."
"Who told you about that?" Dawkins asked.
"That doesn't matter. I want to know about it," Smith said.
"Well, I don't feel like talking about it." Dawkins looked round to see if anyone was watching.
The blonde woman with the cage had paid him extra well to keep his mouth closed. While there wasn't a chance in hell she'd get any of her money back if she complained, word could get around that Dawkins wasn't as close-mouthed as he should be. That might cut into business a little too much for comfort.
"I'm sorry, you'll just have to talk about that," said Smith.
"Are you threatening me?" asked Dawkins. Despite best intentions, his voice got louder. Martini volume.
"No, I'm trying to avoid that," Smith said, lowering his voice to counter Dawkins' increased volume. "I won't tell you that if I want, you will have no pilot's license in the morning. I won't discuss the regular trips you make to Mexico and the unusual cargo you carry out in little paper bags. I'd rather not get into those things. What I want to know is, whom did you fly? Where did you set them down? Who paid you? Who were the passengers? Did they say anything?
With alcohol-induced bravery, Durward Dawkins refused to be intimidated, although his stomach did an emalaman loop, confronted with knowledge of his little drug-running trips from Mexico.
"You want answers? Ask dear Abby," he said. "She answers questions. I don't."
Forgotten now was the lady bartender changing her clothes in the back room. Dawkins said, "I am leaving."
"Have it your own way," Smith said. "You would have done better to answer in here."
"Leave me alone," Dawkins said. Smith reached out to touch the man's shoulder. Dawkins pulled away before the older man could touch him and stomped toward the door. The relief bartender asked Smith,
"What can I get you, sir?"
"Nothing, thank you. I don't drink." Smith took a pack of matches and a free pretzel from the bar. He followed Dawkins outside. As he neared the door, there was a muted yell. When he got to the sidewalk, Durward Dawkins had just completed a merger with the parking meter. His body was on the sidewalk side of the meter, but his right hand had gone through the top of the meter. His fingers fluttered around on the street side of the instrument. Chion stood alongside him.
"He is ready to talk to you now, Emperor."
Smith cleared his throat. He stood so that his body shielded Dawkins' wildly fluttering hand from the view of passers-by.
"Now, who and where and when and what?" he asked.
"I want my hand free first," Dawkins said.
"Where would you like it?" asked Chion, moving close. "I can put it in your left pocket. I can leave it in the trunk of your car. If the Emperor wishes, we can mail it to you. It is for you to decide, big-mouthed one."
"First I'll talk," said Dawkins to Smith. The pilot's eyes rolled in terror. "But you've got to promise to keep this guy off me," he told Smith.
"Just talk," Smith said. 5 minutes later, Smith and Chion were heading for a helicopter which would take them to Westchester County Airport, where a private jet was waiting. Next stop, the Dominican Republic. And 1,500 miles away in the Dominican Republic, Sheila Feinberg threw up her lunch, great chunks of raw steak that had stayed in her stomach only long enough for gastric juices to discolor the red a sticky greenish gray. She laughed. The part of her that was tiger had told her before, but now the woman part confirmed it. It was morning sickness. She was pregnant with the first baby of a new species. Remo had done what he was designed to do, and now, frankly, she found him a little tiresome. It was time to get rid of him. Maybe she would be able to keep that meal down.